Hello and welcome to the Collecting Heroes podcast. This is JD, the collector of collectors, and this is not really the intro. Well, I mean, it is technically the intro to the episode, but a little separate to the normal intro because I wanted to say a big, big, big thank you, 50 times over thank you to everyone for listening to the podcast because this episode is very special. It is the 50th episode. 50 episodes of Collecting Heroes, 50 times, 50 collectors on the podcast. It's a really awesome achievement, and the only reason it's possible is because you keep coming back episode after episode and listening and enjoying, obviously, the nostalgia that we all share with these things that we collect and also with the things that we grew up with as well. So thank you again. Buckle up, because this is another really cool episode, another collector that I really had a great time chatting to, so yeah, thank you again, 50 times over. I know I already said that, but again, thank you, and let's get into the episode. Hello and welcome to the Collecting Heroes podcast. I'm your host, JD, the collector of collectors, and this is the place where I interview pop culture collectors from around the world. And today, I'm heading to Los Angeles with this collector who probably lives by the motto, with great collection comes great responsibility. And his name is Tristan Matthews, and he is a Spider-Man collector. Tristan, thanks for joining the podcast.
Hey, JD, thank you so much for having me. I don't want to get too nerdy right off the bat, but I appreciate the motto, but I just want to point out that the correct one would be, with great power must also come great responsibility, and the must also is a pretty important distinction for Spider-Man fans.
Ah, wow. Yeah, I'm happy to be put in my place. That's fine. Have you ever watched, there's a YouTube, I think it was College Humor, did a show called Actually. Have you ever seen that?
But, I have not. Yeah, I feel like as a collector of collectors, that's probably something you hear a lot.
I feel like I just got the version of that from the Spider-Man fan here.
Well, now I'm hating myself more than normal, which is also
not at all. I'm happy to be corrected, and it's great that you're passionate about it, because this is why I have people on to talk about their passions. So we've been chatting. We've literally just been chatting for half an hour before I even hit record here. And I said, you know, we probably are going to miss out on a lot of cool parts of the conversation here. But I also mentioned to you, and you know this because you mentioned you've listened to a few episodes already, that the first thing I talk about when we talk about passions is, how did you become passionate about Spider-Man? How did you become a collector? And just so that people also know, you aren't just any Spider-Man collector. You are the Guinness World Record holder for the largest collection of Spider-Man memorabilia as well. So tell me a little bit more about that. How did you become a Spider-Man fan, and then how did you start collecting?
Yeah, I think, you know, how I became a Spider-Man fan, the first time I remember seeing Spider-Man, I'm a military brat, so I moved around a lot as a kid, and I lived in England for a while, and my older sister, who sort of was pretty influential throughout my life in terms of a lot of my interest, Rhiannon, she had a Spider-Man Jiggler, which was a like rubber toy of Spider-Man that I remember made me very uncomfortable because the thumbs had broken off. And it was a Ben Cooper product. And Ben Cooper is actually a pretty important company in sort of the realm of Spider-Man collectibles for a reason I could get into in a moment if you want to talk about it. But so the first time I remember seeing Spider-Man was that toy. And then my sister also regularly wore a Spider-Man ski mask for like her winter attire. But beyond that, there was no Spider-Man in the house. You know, I was big into He-Man and then eventually into the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, and eventually found my way back to comic books in the early 90s when I was around 7 or 8. I started reading The Punisher, and I was very big into like a lot of the anti-heroes. So, you know, the Punisher, Ghost Rider, Nomad, a lot of those characters. And I didn't really like the wholesome sort of cookie cutter old characters like Spider-Man or the Fantastic Four. And eventually during, I think it was a tandem of things. It was the Fox cartoon, the Spider-Man cartoon had come out. Mm-hmm. And then around the same time, there was a storyline that's sort of reviled by a lot of Spider-Man fans, which is the Clone Saga. But there was a character in the Clone Saga, Ben Reilly, who became the Scarlet Spider. And Ben Reilly was, he had sort of longer hair to a mullet. He had a beard to a, you know, like scruff. And I really liked that type of character as a kid, sort of, again, the anti-hero, the person who wasn't quite the cookie cutter. And I kind of fell in love with that character. And then just by following their storyline, fell in love with Peter Parker. And then when their character kind of went away and Peter Parker reassumed kind of like the only spider role of the comics for a while, I just continued with them. And I never really viewed myself as a collector as much. I listened to, not to plug another podcast, but the Rob Liefeld has a podcast, and the comic book artist, he has a thing where he doesn't view himself as a collector. He views himself as a consumer. And that's sort of how I viewed myself for a long time, was just, I came to just love Spider-Man stories and I wanted to consume all of them. And I worked at a comic shop in Indiana growing up, in high school and college, called Galactic Greg's. And Greg and I became really close friends. And he would give me a lot of really good deals on books as they were coming in. So I didn't really seek out to buy a lot of Spider-Man stuff. It was just sort of like he would get a trade in and he would have some very key issues. And he knew I love Spider-Man, so he would offer them to me for the price he paid, which is, you know, a pretty fair price, you know. And I was making however much, and I would just get store credit and then just, you know, save it up and then get the comic book. And then going through my collection, a lot of the bigger items I have are gifts. And one of those gifts is Amazing Spider-Man number one. So I got to a point where I had bought every issue of every, right? I had come into every issue of every Spider-Man comic except for Amazing Spider-Man number one and Amazing Fantasy 15, which I will never own. But Amazing Spider-Man number one, and a group of my friends chipped in to buy it for me. And they surprised me at a local brewery. And they, when they gave it to me, my buddy Dan, who I've known forever, was like, "So you have to have like kind of some kind of record, right?" And I was like, I don't think so. I think a lot of people probably are able to eventually accumulate enough, whatever, to have what I have.
Yeah.
And he was like, "Well, you should look into it. And like, wouldn't it be fun to like go for a record?" So I did a little bit of research, you know, AKA Google the Guinness World Record, and nobody had set it before. And the minimum amount of items for my type of collection to set a record is 2000 unique items. So I ended up just kind of reaching out to them, finding out what it took to kind of set a record, and then cataloged my collection and went through all the work for that, which is a whole other conversation.
Oh, no, I've had two collectors like on here that are also Guinness World Record holders before. So I'm familiar with that story of the having to catalog things.
It's like a job.
Definitely.
And so, you know, then I was able to set it. And so also the other caveat, and I've been talking a lot, so then I'll let you ask me some more questions. But
not at all.
The other caveat with it is I'm not claiming at any point to have the biggest collection or to be a bigger Spider-Man fan than everybody else. I've been made very aware by people on the internet that there are other people out there with bigger, more impressive collections. They're all great. My thing with it is, my thing with Spider-Man in general is it's sort of like the Beatles, where everybody can love it equally. You know, like, I'm not saying I'm a bigger fan than Spider-Man. I think the whole point of the character is it is supposed to appeal to as many people. It's a very, you know, broad appealing character. Uh-huh. There's a reason why he's so popular. And across the Spider-Verse and Into the Spider-Verse and No Way Home, they're all breaking records and huge movies. Is that anybody, you could listen to one Beatles song and, in my opinion, be as big of a Beatles fan as the person who's been listening to him since the 60s. So everybody is welcome. And again, that's sort of the message with the Spider-Verse movies, is it's for everybody and we're all equal in our fandom. I've just been fortunate to have a lot of very nice people in my life who have gifted me a lot of things, and then also a very patient partner, my wife, for allowing me to accumulate stuff and giving me a space in our house to keep most of it.
Well, that's definitely something that we as collectors, like for people who have, you know, extensive collections, I think anyone who is in a relationship, you have to have an understanding partner that you know, appreciates that part of you as a person and gives you your space for that thing as well. And I think a lot of those partners do probably ask that we try and contain it to a certain place within the home as well. And that's fair enough.
And the pocketbook, you know?
Yes, definitely. Definitely. Actually, Luke, the first episode of this season, you mentioned listening to Luke and him talking about, you know, people think he might be a millionaire with this type of collection he has, but it's not. It still has to budget out, you know.
Yeah, no, I still rent.
Yeah.
Or just from buying it for 30 years, you know, or being gifted it for 30 years. So,
And look, it is an amazing collection. And whether or not there are people who have less items than you or more items than you, exactly, like you mentioned, your passion can all be the same, and you know, at the end of the day, you still love the same things, and that's it should all bring you together. It's one of the reasons I do this podcast, is, you know, to try and bring collectors and pop culture fans together to appreciate, you know, those fandoms and live in that bit of nostalgia that we all have as well.
It should be fun, right?
Yeah, 100%. If it's not fun, get rid of your collection, honestly.
Yeah.
Like, why would you fill a place up with stuff if it's not fun, or if you don't enjoy it? I 100% believe that. And you also, you mentioned there about being gifted that number one, and a lot of the things you've been gifted, but also the fact that you worked in a comic book store. I imagine that came with it. You mentioned about, you know, having the store credit and everything. I worked in a bookstore when I was younger, and I collected books every time I would come home, you know, on payday with a new bag full of books. And my girlfriend would be like, more books. Where are we supposed to put all these books? And we've been slowly getting through them and reading them and actually getting them, you know, out of the house as well. Like for books that we're like, we'll probably never read that again. Yeah, I know that there's definitely, when you work within that industry, or when you work, you know, with, you know, closely with the collectibles, it's really an occupational hazard to come home with those things.
Yeah. Go ahead, sorry.
No, you go.
No, please.
I was just going to say, with the, you know, so your collection, you're listed as having over 3,000. You were mentioning about the 2,000 plus. It's like, over 3,000, 3,089 is the official count back in 2019 when you were awarded the title. What percentage of that would be comic books, would you say?
Most of it. I would say 90%.
Okay.
Would be comics. So, I mean, again, it was when I was doing the attempt and they wanted to kind of get like photos of the collection. I was like, to an extent, it's hard to photograph because it's just a lot of stuff in boxes. Like,
boxes,
I can take
them
out and like pull them up for you or lay them all on the ground or whatever. But yeah, I mean, I would say 90% are all comics. And then the other thing, not to be a spoil sport about it, but I sort of do have a disagreement with Guinness about how they did some of the what they accepted as part of the collection, meaning they didn't accept any Spider-Gwen or Spider-Woman or Spider-Girl comic books, but they did accept Miles Morales or Spider-Man 2019. Like, it had to be the name Spider-Man, which I get it.
Okay.
But at the same time, like, arguably Spider-Gwen is more closely related to Peter Parker Spider-Man than either Miles or Miguel O'Hara, because Miguel, you know, Spider-Man 2099 has a completely different origin. He just happens to be somewhat spider totem related, and even Miles is bitten by a spider from the same, like, Oscorp in the Ultimate Comics as the Ultimate Spider-Man's Peter was. But you know, Gwen essentially in her universe is bit by the spider that otherwise would have bit Peter, so to me she seems pretty closely related to, I don't know if this is too much, but
that actually makes me think, like, would Doc Ock, for example, or someone like that, would they be like, or Sandman, are they accepted in the Sandman, like in the Spider-Man memorabilia?
The Superior Spider-Man would have been accepted, which was a storyline where Peter Parker's body was taken over by the mind of of Otto Octavius before he died. Sort of like jumped his brain into Peter's body before his body died and kind of took over for 31 issues. And then there were a couple supplemental issues afterward. And that would have counted because it was Spider-Man. And like, I think it should have counted, but I also think Spider-Gwen should count. I also think that Spider-Woman should count and any sort of spider related Marvel character. But
I agree. But that's why I was asking, because also like with, you know, the villains within that Spider-Verse, right? Like if you had a statue of Doc Ock, would they accept that as a piece?
Oh, I don't know. I would agree with you because I wouldn't own it without it being, I wouldn't own a Doc Ock statue if there was no Spider-Man to tie that to. Yeah, I don't know.
Same as like,
I will never do it again. But if I ever do it again, I'll let you know, but I will never do it again. So
fair enough. Well, that's what a lot of the other, like the first collector I had on like Guinness World Record collector, she's from Wales. Her name's Victoria, and she had the first title of the Wizarding World, actually, largest Wizarding World memorabilia. So that encompassed everything from the different movies and the different books and fandom as well. But so I think, you know, looking at that Wizarding World, maybe Spider-Verse would be the, you know, largest collection of Spider-Verse memorabilia would probably be the more accurate
I think you're right.
Title, yeah. Really, I think. And that would allow you to have those other things in there, like your Spider-Gwen, for example. Yeah.
But to your point about how long it takes, it's I was lucky. I got my photo in the book, so I feel like it accomplished what I needed it to. It's fun. It's that's what it was about, and that's what it was. It was fun. So
I had a Spawn collector on, and I was talking to him about it, and I said, you should really submit your collection. No, there is no official Spawn collection like title at the moment, and he has, you know, thousands of items as well. And I said, if you've got the time and you think you got the inclination to do it, go for it. You'll be the first person. Like, you don't need to have the largest collection. You just need to be the first one to submit. Really.
Yeah, I mean, it's like I don't know, you know, if you've seen like the poster or the, you know, for modern art. I went to a museum once and there was a poster on sale and I liked it a lot, and it said, "Modern art equals I could do that plus, but I didn't."
No, I've never seen that. That's interesting.
I was like, yeah, you could do it, but you have to then do it. Like, that's the problem, is like people aren't doing it. And like, so yeah, go ahead and do it. Take the time.
Actually, I want to talk about some items in your collection and your connection to Spider-Man. Well, in particular, your connection to Marvel, we were talking about as well beforehand, is you're in Los Angeles, as I mentioned, you work within the entertainment business as well. So you actually do work for Marvel. Has that, we don't need to talk specifically about your role within Marvel, but you've worked on some of the projects. I don't know if you've worked on Spider-Man projects specifically in the past, have you?
No. So to take some of the mystery away, I'm a post producer or a post supervisor, depending on what show I'm on. With Marvel, I'm a post supervisor, and I've worked so far on the streaming side, and I've currently done Falcon and Winter Soldier, Moon Knight, and then Werewolf by Night are the projects.
I love Moon Knight. Moon Knight is really good. My favorite one so far.
Oh, that's nice to hear. I was a little bummed with some of the reception, but I really liked it. I've read all the Moon Knight comic books, and it's not necessarily the same character, but I felt like there was an attempt to honor the heart of the character while also bringing it into the MCU. And then, you know, Werewolf by Night also was an absolute joy to work on, because to tie back to Spider-Man, Michael Giacchino was the director of that, and he was the composer for the three MCU Spider-Man movies. And so it was really cool to work with him. And he is, before we started recording, we talked about maybe some of the personalities that I've worked with, not at Marvel, but in my career, that haven't been the most fun people to work for. And I would say Michael has been the most, like a Lazarus pit of somebody to work for, like somebody who rejuvenated me to no end. And I will work with him on anything. And he's an incredible person, but, I have not worked on any Spider-Man stuff.
I have him listed here on my talking points, actually, Michael Giacchino.
Nice.
Because of the fact that we have that connection, me being a Batman fan, he was the composer of the score on the Batman as well.
That's right. And I have right over here, he as a gift gave me he had all the suites from the Spider-Man movies that he did, which is all the music that he
amazing.
He created this for me, and so it's like I know this is an audio medium.
It's a book of the sheet music that the like the orchestra and whoever exactly would have used. That's amazing. That's a really unique, cool, but also personalized item, like in your collection, that has a personal tie. It's not just this is cool because it looks like Spider-Man.
It
has this connection to you working with him and him working on that project, and that's really awesome.
Yeah. Thank you. I'm pretty happy about it. It was really nice of him. But no, I haven't worked on any Spider-Man. The No Way Home was coming out when I started working at Marvel, so it had gone into production before I was there. I was fortunate enough, a friend of mine who worked at Marvel brought me as their plus one to the red carpet premiere, which is the only red carpet premiere I've ever been to. I'm a low man on the food chain, but that was a very surreal experience. You know, I saw a bunch of people there that I never would have seen otherwise. But look, I haven't been offered the chance to work on a Spider-Man show or movie. What I think I would say, I think unless I had another, if I had another job to take, I would probably turn it down. Because I we'll see if I'm ever fortunate enough to be given the opportunity, we'll see what I say. But the way I view it is life is hard and my job is hard. And
you wouldn't want any negative feelings or memories from that experience
to look forward to something without knowing everything that's going to happen.
And
it would be, you know, it's like with Spider-Man, it's like I try to avoid all spoilers for both the movies and the comic books. It's the one thing that I try to keep very just in its own part of my life, where it's like it's I can access it and then go back to the real world. And I feel like if I were to you know, if I were to like work on it day in and day out, then life would take that from me too. And like I'm very happy. I have a very blessed life. But you know, it's hard. It's all a struggle to a degree, you know, and like I don't want to mix that necessarily. I want to keep
that. Yeah, of course.
And like we talked about nostalgia before the show, and just kind of like that part of what I love about nostalgia is being able to tap into this part of yourself that's like this pure, mostly probably just childhood really, but like that part of yourself that's like not always accessible, you know? And so I try to keep Spider-Man there. So I don't get too analytical when I read the comic books. I really just try to like, even if it's a writer artist that I don't love on an extended run, I usually just try to be on for the ride, you know, and just enjoy it.
That's a great approach. And I think just to go into that nostalgia bit you were talking about there, I completely agree. And I think one of the things I love about nostalgia, and I've spoken about nostalgia and on the podcast multiple times with people, and I even sort of asked the collectors on the Collector Therapy episode, like, how do you define nostalgia? What does nostalgia mean to you? You know, for me, it's also about that childhood whimsy, as you mentioned, you know, like tapping into something as adults that I think we really, a lot of people sort of put aside. You know, there's these childhood fancies that once you get to a certain age, we're like, oh no, that's not a part of my life now. That's not who I am. But I think when I even talk to people, you know, who are older, like older, I'm talking like 70s and 80s, they've kept some fun. Yeah. They've kept some fun in their life. You know, they've kept active, that, you know, within communities or whatever. That's how they've managed to keep themselves young at heart. When we talk about that, that's a saying, I think I probably would really go to what I was saying, you know, being young at heart. And I think if we could be a little young at heart at times, you know, and tap into that part of ourselves, it's through nostalgia we can do that. And I think that really is something that a lot of people should have in their life if they can, you know, never let that go. You don't have to not be an adult. You don't have to not have adult things and behave as an adult, but you should be able to have some joy from things outside of that as well.
Absolutely. I mean, it's not mutually exclusive, you know, and sort of to that point of nostalgia, like I can go to a comic shop or a toy store, and if I see a specific comic book on the shelf or an action figure on the shelf, not every comic book does that, not every action figure does that, but there are some of them that will immediately connect me to a moment in time and a person who, I mean, whether it's like a high school girlfriend who sent me flowers at the comic shop I worked at, and attached to it was a handwritten card that was also had Spider-Man like on it with like a Spider-Man action figure saying, "Will you take me to homecoming?" Like I haven't spoken to that person in 20 years and I believe they're doing well and I hope they are. And it was a high school thing. I'm not nothing weird about it.
It's a memory.
It's a memory. And I love being able to connect back to that. Or, you know, again, the Amazing Spider-Man comic that my friends bought for me. I mean, obviously that's a pretty cool one to get. I don't want to discount that. But, you know, luckily for me, what it does is it reminds me of that moment in time where 20 of my family members and friends all pitched in and bought me a comic book.
And that's so amazing.
Or any of that. You know, my wife and I, when we were engaged, we ended up in Chicago, and a friend of ours is a professional photographer, and they took photos of us on a rooftop doing an engagement photo where I was dressed as Spider-Man and my wife as Spider-Woman. And she was just being very, whatever. And it wasn't our main engagement photo. It wasn't like the one that we announced. It was sort of, we did that. And then like we were there and, you know, we did this other thing.
She humored you.
She humors me a lot. and so now, like when I see, you know, she was like Jessica Drew, Spider-Man or Spider-Woman. And so I always sort of have that when I see her in certain parts, especially now that we have a kid, when Jessica Drew was pregnant. Now I view that and it immediately connects me to my family. So there's just like, it's sort of like you're a piece of gum that just keeps accumulating everything that you're rolled around in. And then, you know, you can always access it and kind of look back on it. That was kind of a gross way to view something that might otherwise be fully beautiful, but you know.
No, not at all. I, you're right. Like there are all these different things and these core memories that we have throughout life. And if we can tie them to those other things that we love, then there's a beauty in that. There's definitely a beauty in that, whether it be, you know, an ex right through to the woman that you're now, you know, married to and have a child with.
And everybody in between, like friends between.
Exactly.
You know,
like, exactly.
You know, not to just make it about like those kind of relationships, but
no,
I remember
of course not.
When, you know, Peter Parker in the Ultimate Universe dies in I think Ultimate Spider-Man 160. But I remember I was going to dinner with some friends and I just offhandedly told somebody, I was like, ugh, there's a comic book coming out today, but now we all got to go meet at this dinner and I'm not going to get it. And this was, you know, I was like in my late 20s. I was like, oh, I really want to read this comic book. And that friend drove to my comic shop without me knowing and like went up to them, was like, hey, I know this isn't a pull list. Can I just buy it for him? I'm going to go see him at a dinner right now. And they brought it to the dinner. And then I like got to like go off by myself and read it real quick and have a little emotional moment. And now I'm always thinking about Casey when I think of that comic book. So that's like the cool part for me with collecting and nostalgia and all that, to have those access points to time travel, I guess.
It sounds like you've got some really awesome friends and family as well, that they would go out of their way to do that, which makes me think, and look, you're a humble man. I've already learned that just through our conversation already. But I'm sure that you've done your share of nice things from them over the time for them to feel compelled to do
better,
those types of nice
think
things.
They better think that.
Oh, I love it. Completely mental blanking now. You threw me. I love it.
Like, no, you can't look, you can't be humble and self-deprecating if you're a spider. You have to be if you're a Spider-Man fan. That's part of it. You know, it's like, am I depressed because I, you know, what is it from High Fidelity? Am I depressed because I listened to The Cure or whatever? Or
oh yes,
I'm depressed. It's like, am I neurotic through self-loathing because I read Spider-Man, or do I read Spider-Man because I'm neurotic and all that? I don't know.
That's a great comparison. I love High Fidelity. Actually, I really love Nick Hornby's books, the author. But I also was a massive fan of John Cusack over the years. Like I had went through a little phase of collecting his movies and watching them all, like Serendipity, Gross Point Blank, all those sorts of.
He could have been movies. A pretty good Peter Parker.
When he could have been,
yeah.
I could see him doing a villain role, actually. Like if
Marvel say we brought pitch, in, well, we could pitch like an old man Spider-Man, sort of like Logan,
right? Oh yeah, yeah.
Bring in maybe John Cusack as like an older Spider-Man.
That's not a bad idea. So this is why you work in the entertainment business, right?
I'm not creative. I'm a pencil pusher. I do calendars and budgets.
Oh, I'm sure you had to have some sort of creativity to get in there at some point. At some point,
maybe with my resume.
Oh, I love it. I love it. So let's talk about your collection some more as well. So you mentioned about 90% is the comics, and then 10% of 3,000 is still a sizable collection of other items. Do you have certain items that you pick up? Specifically, like if you're at a store and you see a certain item, you're like, oh, I have to grab that certain item? Or do you have things that you avoid adding to your collection at the same time?
I definitely avoid Funko Pops. I see you have some of them.
Just a few.
I thought of the joke before I said that. Now I feel bad.
That's fine. That's fine.
I'm not a huge Funko Pop person. It's whatever, I mean, certainly at this point in collecting, it's more about, I don't need everything. And when you're collecting somebody like you with Batman or me with Spider-Man, there's an infinite amount of opportunity. You could try to get every Burger King Happy Meal that comes out and every cereal box or every action figure from every movie and cartoon and Marvel Legend and everything. And there's so much out there. So I think at this point, I don't think there's any equation that will get me to buy a certain collectible. It's more if I think it looks cool or, I think there has been stuff throughout my collecting. And it's funny because like the Guinness, since I set the record and then till now, I did almost buy more stuff, non-comic book stuff, since setting the record, because when doing that and then learning more about like the history of collectibles, I've kind of been more aware of what's out there. And so like to reference the first Spider-Man memory I have, which was that Ben Cooper Jiggler toy that made me uncomfortable because the thumbs fell off. Ben Cooper are you familiar with like the Ben Cooper costume?
Actually, you did mention that you were going to talk about that. So yes, some of the story.
I think you will know about them if you Google them after the show. They basically made the Halloween masks that you think of when you think of like 1950s, 1960s Halloween costumes. So like the witch with like the elastic band and like the like the Batman, like all that kind of stuff. And there was a costume in the 50s, I believe, that was the Spider-Man, no hyphen, but like Spider-Man. And it looks enough like Spider-Man to be a case that Marvel was inspired when they created the character. And there's no way of knowing what actually happened, but there are stories that Jack Kirby worked for Ben Cooper and he did work for the company, but Steve Ditko would have walked by these displays when thinking of Spider-Man. And so there's a world where this all kind of is its own little thing. So the Spider-Man, and then eventually Ben Cooper, there was no lawsuit, but something happened where Ben Cooper was the first company to officially license Spider-Man merchandise through Marvel. And it was a Spider-Man Halloween costume. So
you think that was a little wink, wink agreement? Like, okay, we won't see you about using this character.
I mean, it had
you give us this agreement so that we can make some money off
this. It was the '60s. It wasn't like they thought it would be what it is today. I don't think anybody thought that any of this would have been
multi-billion-dollar.
Exactly. Like that, it would be the payday it is. So it's more of a like, well, we don't really want to go through the, why would we sue you? Like this could be mutually beneficial. Let's just do it. So one of the items I bought recently, and it was the second one to come out, not the original Spider-Man one, but it was like the Ben Cooper masks that just have in my displays that are, you know, behind me. I don't know how well you can see them. Original art is very expensive, and most of what I have have been gifts to me. But I think as I move forward, if I were to ever invest in things, it would be more original art. Like I think that's pretty cool because it's very, it's one of a kind, you know.
I can see some in the background. You've got a lot of black and white pieces I can see there.
Yeah, I mean,
so that's like the early versions before the colorists get to them, right?
Exactly right. So yeah, so for the most part, unless artists are working digitally, which is more common nowadays, you know, the artist would write on an 11 by 17 piece of paper, draw the panels, draw the artwork, and then they would give it to an inker or ink it themselves. And inking is when you embellish on top of pencils to then, you know, give shading and sort of create more detail into the artwork.
They just color in, right? They just color in.
They just trace, you know, if you're a Chasing Amy fan.
Yes, the Chasing Amy. That's exactly
you, right.
You got the reference right. Yep.
Yeah. We're of a similar generation.
Yeah.
I think what a cool story is, and going back to how fortunate I've been with a lot of the pieces, I have a page from the first Spider-Man comic I ever read, which was a Web of Spider-Man 126. And how that happened was, I was, I don't think this is answering your initial question, so I don't know.
No, that's fine. Go for it.
For years I was like, well, I don't really own a lot of art, but if I were to, you know, and art's expensive, but if I wanted to buy a piece, you know, I'm not gonna be able to afford a Steve Ditko or a John Romita Sr. or something page. So what would have meaning to me? And it was a page from the first Spider-Man comic I ever read. And I would every once in a while, like Google, like the artist and the issue number and all that, and see what would pop up. And I would never find anything. And I would find, I would look up Stephen Butler, and I would look up Web of Spider-Man 117, 118, 119, 120. And then one night I was watching Ultimate Spider-Man cartoon, a few years ago, about 8 years ago. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to just reach out to the artist on Facebook. So I found like the artist, and I like messaged him, and I was like, hey, I've been trying to find like a page from this comic, and I can find pages from all of the issues around it, but I can never find one from this issue.
Yeah.
And he wrote back and he said that, well, that was a fill-in issue. That wasn't me doing the art. So at an early age, I had committed the wrong artist to my memory.
Ah.
And when I looked up the artist who had actually drawn that issue, they did not do a lot of artwork. They eventually moved into directing animation. And nobody, I don't fault you if you don't believe this part of the story, but they had been directing the issue of Spider-Man, or the episode of Spider-Man I'd been watching that night. And I had no reason to believe that they were an animation director. You know, like there's no correlation, but they were the same person. And as you said, I live in LA, and I had a friend who worked at DreamWorks, and Roy Burdine is the name of the artist. And he was working at DreamWorks, and I reached out to my friend from college from Indiana. And I said, you know, Brendan is his name. And I was like, hey, Brendan, I know you work at DreamWorks and it's a huge company, but do you happen to know this guy, Roy Burdine? And he said, he moved in across the hall from me 2 weeks ago, and I've been looking for an excuse to go talk to him.
Oh, wow.
Let me go talk to him. And then he, a day later, texted, and he was like, hey, Roy said he'd love to get lunch with you and talk about his time working on Spider-Man.
Oh, amazing. Like, oh,
that'd be great. So I meet them at DreamWorks, and we go to Tender Greens for lunch, and we talk, and he tells me all about the time he worked at Marvel. And then he was like, do you want to come back and check out my office? And I was like, of course. So we go back to his office, and he holds up two pages from the comic. And he was like, this is all I have left through, like a couple things happened. I only have two pages left. Do you want one? And he just gave me one of them.
Oh, so that's one of
the pages I have up there.
That's cool.
That was like one of those moments where, you know, I went back to my truck in the parking garage of this, of DreamWorks. And I had a little like, emotional moment, with myself in the.
I can see you getting emotional just right now talking about it, like remembering
honestly, it feels unbelievable. Like it's like a story that, you know, again, I don't know if I would believe if I heard it, frankly.
No, I completely believe it. And look, it is a small world, right? Like, you know, you have, and I won't do any spoilers here, but you have someone that you're connected to who actually is connected to a TV show that I love that you're maybe going to put me in touch with. So hopefully that might...
Oh, my buddy or the pop quiz?
Yeah, your buddy.
Yeah.
So we won't go into spoilers there just in case it doesn't happen. But like if that does eventuate into something, it's because of this, you know, these connections that we make. And you've obviously made connections through work that got you, you know, you were able to find an avenue to that person.
No, that was just one of the dirtbags I knew in college.
Well, it's still the even more proof that it's really a small world, you know. Like,
I'm kidding. So that, if you listen to this,
but I love that story, and this is another. You asked me earlier before we started recording why I do the podcast, and it's to hear stories like this. I love to hear about those moments in people's life and collections, and the little emotional resonations that happen throughout, you know, these experiences as well, and. Again, going back to the nostalgia, going back to those memories, core memories. This is now a core memory of yours, right?
Yeah.
Like that has to do with something in your collection. If you, and another question I like to ask collectors, and given some of the emotional collection you do have, would I may know the answer to this. I think it may be that amazing Spider-Man number one. But if there was one item, if you had to tomorrow, your whole item had all like get rid of the whole collection. And you're only going to keep one item. Is that the one you would keep, or is there another one?
So it's funny you say that. I like hand of God tonight with my wife. We were talking about if we needed to run out of the house and, you know, grab our son and just get
out. What
would
you grab? Yeah.
She was like, I know that's all you would do. I know that you're the kind of parent who would just grab your son and get out of here and make sure the dog is out, you know? And I was like, yeah, but I might also, if I had 5 more seconds, I would stop and grab a different piece of art. Like I have a piece of art that my friend Greg, who owned the comic shop that I worked at when I was younger, mm-hmm. passed away a few years ago. Thank you. I'm sorry it happened. But his wife gave me a page from his. He had a pretty extensive original art collection, and one of the pages was John Byrne Spider-Man page from Marvel Team Up, and it's with Spider-Man and the Kraven, and I can send you a picture later, but I have it up over here. Mm-hmm. And to me, it's like, look, it's twofold. It's one of a kind, or it's threefold. It's one of a kind, nothing else. No other page like it exists because it's the page from the comic, you know, it's
yep.
And then it's from Greg, and then it's also fairly valuable, you know, at this point. The Amazing Spider-Man has all sorts of meaning tied to it, but it is one of a lot. Like I could
you could get that
I never want to get it back. Like if something happened, like God forbid my house burned down, I don't know that I would replace a lot of my stuff.
Yeah,
but I think that there are some things that I could not replace even if I wanted to, and those
that's
would
definitely
be
one.
Yeah, I think that the John Byrne Spider-Man page would be one. Obviously, the Web of Spider-Man page from Roy, the first Spider-Man comic I ever read, would be another. And I think it'd all be original art. Like I have a John Romita Jr. page that I bought when I was in high school before original art got more expensive. Like in high school, it was fairly obtainable. It's not really anymore, unfortunately. You know, that would be one just because John Romita Jr. is probably my favorite Spidey artist.
That's cool. That's a great answer. And yeah, just because I knew that you had this item, the Amazing Spider-Man one, but obviously now knowing about that other page, that's it's cool. Like to have those items. And again, you have so many items that are literally, you have these emotional connections to. So your collection is not just about, I have to collect the most amount of Spider-Man things. It's just, I have this love of this character, but also I have this love that has transcended into my friendships and family and stuff that has really tied it all together. And I absolutely love that. I just wanted also, you mentioned pop quiz before and yes, it's correct. For anyone who listens to the podcast, they know I do pop quizzes, and I do actually have a pop quiz for you today, Tristan. And because we are getting in to time wise, I think we're getting close to an hour that we've been recording for. So I think
I told you you have me for at least another hour and a half if you need me. Not to say you need to.
I think for the listener's sake, I probably won't. I won't go that long in the recording, but I definitely want to go into that because we've already spoken about so much the history of Spider-Man and different things as well. And you clearly are very knowledgeable, and I have prepared a pop quiz for you.
Oh, boy.
So without further ado, let's jump in. Five questions for the pop quiz. I think some of these are going to be very easy. In fact, they may all be easy for you, but we'll see. We'll see. And anyone listening can obviously play along at home. So, yeah, here we go. Question number one. What is the name of the pig character in Into the Spider-Verse?
That would be Peter Porker, the Spectacular Spider-Ham.
Yes, yes, yes. Ding, 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 ding. I love that. He was a great character. I loved him.
I am unironically a big fan of Peter Porker. I think that I love the idea that it's a spider that was bitten by a radioactive ham. You know, it's such a funny, like weird, like bizarro thing. And again, I think Spider Ham would probably count toward the Guinness record. Whereas again, Spider Gwen wouldn't, which is probably a shame.
Just a quick question, because I don't actually know this as well, and this isn't part of the pop quiz. But was he a character that was created for that, or did he already exist in some form in the comics beforehand?
So this is extra credit with the pop quiz. So if I miss another
I'll give you an extra half point.
Great. No, he was created, I think it was the 80s, if not the early 90s. It was a character that is sort of its own universe of animal based characters. So, you know, you have J. Jonah Jackal, I think is the J. Jonah Jameson analog. You have Mary Jane Water Buffalo is Mary Jane Watson, and sort of a bunch of other like sort of animal based characters, and it's not necessarily as comic book absurd or cartoon absurd as the Spider-Verse version is, where he has a mallet that he pulls out.
Yeah,
it's a little more anthropomorphic. I think that's the way you're supposed to say it.
Yeah.
In the comics, I mean, it is still a cartoon based world, but yeah, no. So to answer your question a little more straightforward, it is a pre-existing character about 20 to 30 years before the movie.
Cool. I wasn't sure if they'd sort of like that harkened back to some sort of insider knowledge of you know, Spider-Man fans as well.
That's the thing. The amazing thing with the Spider-Verse movies is how, like, I'm pretty sure everything in both of the movies existed prior to the movie. So even out of the Spider-Verse or across the Spider-Verse rather, you know, there's like a web slinger character, which is like a cowboy Spider-Man character. And there have been like that character exists prior to the movie as well. I mean, so yeah.
Wow. Well, they could do a similar thing with Batman. Just talking about my own fandom, because they have so many Elseworlds character versions of Batman as well throughout the years, that they could probably do the same thing if they wanted.
Yeah,
I don't think it wouldn't resonate in the same fun atmosphere, I think, that the Spider-Verse movies do.
It'd still be pretty great. I would still be
pretty cool. Yeah, same.
Pretty awesome too.
All right, let's go on. Question number two. So you're already perfect and you've got extra points as well. What year was Amazing Fantasy number 15 published?
1962.
Ding, ding, ding. Correct. And yes, correct. Actually, yes, they're correct. I did note the month, but I didn't put that as part of the required answer. But yes, extra points for that as well. And for anyone not familiar, Amazing Fantasy number 15 is actually the first appearance of Spider-Man in the comics as well, in Marvel. Number three, perfect so far with extra credit. How much did that? This is a follow-on question, actually, for Amazing Fantasy number 15. How much did that comic sell for in 2021?
Oh, in 2021. I thought you were going to say 1962.
No.
I think it was 12 cents when it came out. In 2021, how much did Amazing Fantasy 15 sell for? This is why I'll never own it. Oh boy, I don't know. So I'm gonna just guess 1.2 million.
A little bit further than that. It was 3.6 million.
Ooh.
Yes, ouch.
What was the grade on that, do you know?
I believe it was only a 6 or something, actually.
You think about every, like, look, again, I'm very happy with my life and blessed, but I think about when I was in like high school or college, like college when I had credit cards, when I shouldn't have credit cards and like I bought, you know, I'd go to the bar with my fake ID and get a bunch of beer or whatever. And I definitely saw Amazing Fantasy 15 at, you know, whether it was Wizard World Chicago or whatever in the early aughts for like 1,000 or so. Oh, and I, at the time, like out of my price, like, and it was out of my price range. And not to say it's in my price range now, but like the fact that it's now 3 point whatever million or I'll try to punish myself a little bit by going on eBay or Heritage Auction and looking at it. And like, I can't even afford a single page from Amazing Fantasy. Like there are literally just you could buy like a page from the comic. That's like CGC'd in the clamshell for
tens of thousands of
dollars. Yeah. And it's for one page. Like anyway. All right.
Well, funnily enough, actually, because I had to sort of compare this, talking about Batman again, I was thinking for comparison, how much was the highest Detective Comics 27, the first appearance of Batman? I was like, I wonder how close they were. Not even close. The Detective Comics 27, would you think that sold for higher or lower?
I would hope higher. I mean, it's 30 years earlier. And so probably a lot more scarce. I would say higher.
Yeah, well, you'd be wrong. And I was wrong as well. In fact, it, the highest one at auction sold is 1.74 million. So less than half of what the Amazing Fantasy 15 went for.
JD, I believe you did your research, but I just can't trust that. And I'm going to have to do my own. So,
well, look it up. But I can tell you that the original Batmobile from the 1966 sold for $5 million at auction. So
the original what?
Batmobile from the 1966.
Oh.
Yeah, like from the TV show. That actually sold for $5 million at auction. So if you really want to spend some money on a Batman memorabilia, you can go and try and seek that one out.
Great.
All right, so... Well, you missed that, but you did make up extra credit on the other one. So you're doing pretty well so far. I wasn't sure if I'd stump you with that one, but that's good. That's good. So number four, and this one, again, I think is going to be a nice, easy one for you. Which alien symbiote made its 1984 debut in The Amazing Spider-Man?
The Venom symbiote?
Yes. Ding, ding, okay. Ding. Correct. Yes, Venom. Correct. And for extra points, what planet did he come from? Or it? Is it he? It? Is it it?
Like, I believe it, it's, I believe it's a, I believe it would be an it or a them.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I believe the symbiote came from Clintar.
Correct.
And then I also there is a disagreement or sort of an argument to be had that it first appears in either Secret Wars number 8 or a Marvel team up comic book, which might be 147. It's a Frank Miller cover, or Amazing Spider-Man, I believe 252. And the reason that happens is I believe 252 came out before Secret Wars number 8, but in the chronological order of Marvel comics, it should have come out after Secret Wars number 8. Anyway, there's like a nerd argument over what the first appearance is that, you know, you could dive in, but as long as I got the question right, I don't really care.
Yeah, you did. I definitely, like, you think if there was an episode of Actually that was related, you could be on that.
I'm just trying to like do a podcast with you.
No. No, I love it because you've got so much knowledge. I love how much knowledge. In fact, I lack some of that knowledge, like as much knowledge as I have from the history of Batman. I can't pull all those numbers and things like that for every key like issue out of my head. That's knowledge that I haven't actually managed to ingrain in my brain yet. I would love to. I'd love to one day have that. It comes with obviously reading comics for a long, long time.
Well, I was going to say maybe next time I'll put together some Batman trivia for you.
I don't want to have to fail at that.
I could probably think of a few questions to ask you, but we could also do it off air.
perfect. All right. Well, last question. So you're doing pretty good so far. All right. And this is one that I thought had a really cool little connection to yourself, actually. Spider-Man No Way Home, and this is a bit of an obscure question, so no problem if I get you on this one, but Spider-Man No Way Home came out in 2021, and the three actors, Tobey Maguire, Willem Dafoe, and J.K. Simmons, actually set their own Guinness World Record for their appearance in that movie. Do you know what the record was for?
I'm sorry, so it was Willem Dafoe, J.K. Simmons, and who else?
And Willem Dafoe. So Tobey Maguire, Willem Dafoe, and J.K. Simmons.
Oh. I have no idea.
That's okay. It was an interesting, I put it in here because it was such an interesting fact that I had. And and being that you're a Guinness World Record holder, I thought it would be.
I know I should know.
Time together.
Hold on, wait, that's fine. Let me guess. Let me try a guess. So it's
a record. Give a guess.
Are they all? They all share the record. They're all part.
They share the record. Correct. They share the record.
Oh, are they the only three actors who have starred in four movies together across several property? I don't know.
Well, you seemed like you were almost going towards it, but the record is actually the record for the longest career as a live action Marvel character, because they originally appeared in 2002's Spider-Man together. So it was 19 years, 225 days is the official record. And that was the record set by all three of them by appearing, you know,
Now I have an icebreaker. If I ever meet him, I can bring that up.
Correct. And do you, just for extra interest, I'll give you a point back if you can get this. Who held the record prior to that?
It's specific to a Marvel actor?
To a Marvel character in film. Yeah.
Marvel character in film.
Maybe it'd be easier for you to guess this. I don't know.
I mean, I think I would guess what, Lou Ferrigno?
No.
Or Stanley.
No. I mean, they're good guesses. They're good guesses. Before that, it was actually a fellow countryman of mine, Hugh Jackman.
Oh,
as the Wolverine.
Of course.
So he held the record for 16 years. So it was 16 years and I can't remember how many days, about 16 years and 200 days or something like that. Because he had 2000 in X-Men and then 2017 Days of Future Past.
So I wonder if it counts if he comes back with
Deadpool. Correct. That's what I was about to say. So I think he'll actually get that record back if he turns up in Deadpool 3, which we've seen images of, right?
Yeah. It's pretty interesting. I can't wait to see it.
Definitely. I love the Deadpool movies. Well, look, there was a couple of tougher questions in there, but I think you did pretty well. And with the extra points that we threw in for you, I think you probably came out about 4 out of 5, which is pretty good.
I passed.
Yeah, okay, that's definitely a pass. I definitely passed. Thank you. I can let this recording go out. You know,
you don't have
to feel ashamed.
Yeah, it was fun too, which is again the point of all of this.
Yeah, and I just love going back and not only that, learning new things. Like I had no idea about that record with them, the live action, the Marvel characters. You know, I had no idea about that was even a thing, you know, until I read about it. So that's really cool. Well, look, Tristan, thank you very much for being on the podcast. I've had a great time talking to you. Before we wrap up, I do always get people to plug where people can find you. You're not really, but you're not really on socials as like, you're not, you know, like really posting about your collection on Instagram or anywhere. But if people did want to actually go and follow you, where could they find you?
Yeah, I don't know that I'm a very interesting person to follow. I'm Cabins in the Air on Instagram. That's probably the only place. It's a private account, but I'll add people if I see that they're cool collector nerd people. And then you'll probably just see photos of my wife and kid and dog for the most part. I do have another account on Instagram that I have not followed up on in years, so I don't really want to. It's a Spider-Man collector one. Supplementally, if I end up doing more with it, I'll let you know. I can plug it again at a later date. But no, I like we talked about before the show, I don't really necessarily want to be a public. Not that I want to be private. I just I'm not super.
It's interesting. Not something. Yeah.
I don't. I just have a family and a job and a love for a fictional character.
Well, what you do have is some fantastic stories, and I've really enjoyed hearing them today. So, but I'll put the link to your Instagram in, you know, down in the description. And then if you do tend to actually reactivate or, you know, start posting on that other one you're talking about, let me know and I'll add it there. And if anyone wants to check, they're listening to this in the future, they can see it.
Yeah, this was a lot of fun. Thank you again for having me, and I hope people enjoyed listening.
My pleasure. My pleasure. Excelsior.
Excelsior.
Another one on the shelf for the collector of collectors, and can you believe we've done 50 episodes? It's just, I'm still in awe. So thank you again for listening, and here's looking forward to episode 100 down the track.